Yes to Life show on UK Health Radio. I'm Robin Daly, host for the show and founder of Yes to Life, the UK's integrative cancer care charity, helping people with cancer to find ways to help themselves through the vast range of resources that come under the banner of integrative medicine. My guest on the show this week is a bit of a regular, a medical doctor with a passion for integration, whose pragmatic and carefully considered views on integration never fail to be enlightening. Dr. Elizabeth Thompson is best known for the establishment of the NCIM, the National Centre for Integrative Medicine in Bristol, which has now for many years been taking a lead in providing training in integrative care to healthcare specialists. Hi, Elizabeth. So pleased to have you back on the show again.
Hi, Robin. I'm delighted to be back. It's always lovely to be in conversation with you.
So our topic for today is fasting. An unexpected new player on the scene a few years ago seemed to be part and parcel of the arrival of ketogenics. And both those techniques have made their mark as useful approaches for some people. But maybe particularly fasting, as it seems to have quite a wide potential for application. So I know at NCIM, the National Centre for Integrative Medicine, you've been paying a bit of attention to this whole area. And maybe you could start off by telling us a bit about where your explorations have been leading you, what you've been involved in.
Yeah, I mean, I've been on a personal journey with my own metabolic health, with rising cholesterol and lipid dysregulation and wondering about statins with my GP. But I just started to get really curious, and I'm fortunate enough to be in the integrative healthcare space. So I started to learn quite a lot with strong genes, you know, of diabetes, my Welsh genes, and trying to outrun them. So actually, that has led me on a journey of learning more about fasting. And as you said, Robin, it can be very applicable. It can be something that people can incorporate into their lives as a ritual or as a habit change. And for many people, they can do that quite easily. I just want to say that we've just finished a fabulous new 3-week student choice placement called Let's Go Keto. And we weren't recommending that we all go on a ketogenic diet, but we really wanted these doctors of the future from Bristol University to really understand this lifestyle intervention and the power to essentially drop your insulin. And this is really important in metabolic disease or metabolic syndrome and also cancer. So that's the journey I've been on to, you know, to find out how do you shift to a low insulin lifestyle. And we could talk a bit more about that.
Be interested to. Okay, so fasting, it seems to be divided up into various types of ongoing longer-term fasting. And we can look at all those in a minute. And then it has specific short-term fasts. The ones we typically hear about, these are an adjunct to conventional treatment. And this latter variety is maybe one of the best-known types of fasting for cancer, typically a short fast to accompany chemo or radiotherapy treatment. And there's quite a wide appreciation of the benefits that this offer amongst those with cancer these days. So I wondered if you start out by describing what's involved and what are the benefits to be had.
Yeah. So even 5 years ago, when my patients said, oh, I would like to fast during my cancer treatments, I would be part of that group that would say, oh dear, I'm not sure about that. You'll feel weak, you'll lose weight. And it just shows you how quickly this kind of movement for change has kind of, you know, accelerated in pace, that we now realize that fasting during your cancer treatments can protect your healthy cells. And that's because there have been people in the research arena, Dr. Michalsson in the Charité in Berlin, also Walter Longo, who I've been following for a while now, really enjoying his fasting cancer book.
Right.
Quite technical, but he really breaks up the trials And I think one of the most important kind of messages he gives is, and I've always given this message to my patients, is that cancer cells aren't very intelligent. They've kind of gone rogue and they're not obeying the whole system networking messages that your body usually responds to. Just a big shout out to the body that it is involved with multiple processes every minute of every day. And finding that kind of orchestration is very important. But it remains a mystery. We don't really know how the body regulates all these processes. We know like the hypothalamus part of the brain releases lots of hormones. But we're not quite sure where the central regulating mechanism is. So one of the things that Walter Longo talks about is that imagine the commander of an army is messaging his army to lie down and protect yourself. But the other army isn't connected to that general, that messenger. So it stays exposed. And this is the idea that when you fast, it's actually a protective mechanism that is driven by your genes that gets activated. And we've had that gene for a survival mechanism over hundreds of thousands of years, the idea that we will fast and we can manage fasting and then we'll eat. But the cancer cell, this rogue cell, not listening, not getting feedback, doesn't know how to go into that protection. So that short-term fast, as you said, often kind of 24 hours before, 36 hours after an intervention, can actually protect your healthy cells so that you can go through cancer treatments more easily.
Yeah. In what does that actually look like? The experience of the cancer patient is likely to change in what way by fasting?
Yeah, well, actually, it looks like a cancer patient could find that their side effects are reduced. So things like fatigue, mouth ulcers, diarrhea, all of those symptoms are the healthy cells reacting to the cancer treatment. Now, we know that cancer treatments have got a lot more complex of late. So it's not like the three-week cycle where you get an infusion and then 3 weeks later you get another infusion. There are experts in the field of fasting in cancer that can support you around that time of maybe a complex cancer regime. And in the future, the team at the National Center for Integrative Medicine would like to support people. At the moment, just winding back to something a bit more simple, I just want to talk about why dropping your insulin can be good for you if you have cancer. It's actually good for all of us because, as I say, our genes are designed to kind of famine and feast, yeah? But also we've got another element that's really worth understanding is that when we fast, we can release ketones. We have to do quite a long fast, somewhere in the region of 16 to 18 hours, that's 17 hours, you'll start to see ketones being released. Quite interesting for me working with a young group of doctors in training because they're fasting glucose when I invited them into a 16-hour fast, was lovely at 4.8. Their ketones were coming up to 0.7, 0.9. For me, as an older woman with a degree of insulin resistance, I was seeing a fasting glucose of 5.5 and no ketones. So one of the ideas and why you can start simply with a bit of fasting is just to realize that a lot of us will have developed some insulin resistance over years of eating sugar, carbohydrate that's broken down into sugar, because we've only just realized that it's a problem. And in fact, just today on the radio, there was a bit of research that showed post-Second World War, where everyone ate less sugar, that seemed to be healthier for a baby in the womb. So we're only just really acknowledging the problem of both ultra-processed foods, but also sugar in the diet. And I'd like to talk a little bit about that, if I could, about how we see sugar. Yeah.
It's very, very important topic.
It's very important because a lot of people, when they are challenged by a cancer diagnosis, they'll start to make healthy changes, which aren't easy. And I'm often just celebrating those changes. But what can happen is sometimes people can say, oh, I've moved to mainly plant-based diet and I'm now eating a lot of fruit. So I don't want to disappoint people, but there are fruits that can keep your insulin low. And your insulin is an amazing master hormone that, when you think about it, which we didn't realize this until more recently with Dr. David Unwin's work in metabolic health, that the body tries to keep 1 teaspoon of sugar in all 8 pints of blood. It doesn't want any more than 1 teaspoon. So we've got to understand that if we eat a bowl of white rice, we are ingesting 9 to 10 teaspoons of sugar. So then the body has to respond quite quickly to get that sugar out of the blood system. And it uses insulin to do that. Now, if we just keep on putting sugar in, then the body will stop responding to insulin. And that's what we mean by insulin resistance. There's also a very important element, which I only learned this week, because it's so interesting and complex. There's another hormone called leptin, which tells us we've eaten, we're satisfied, we may be putting on a little bit too much weight. Insulin and leptin will compete at the receptor site. So if there's too much insulin, your leptin can't tell your brain that actually you've had enough. So that's the other reason why dropping your insulin is important. So this is where we come right round to the ketogenic diet again, because what we were learning in Let's Go Keto is just, I called it, how low can you go? So for some people who use a ketogenic diet to help with bipolar, that's a mental disorder, or polycystic ovary syndrome, which we've realized is a metabolic disorder that leads to lots of follicles in your ovary, but also weight gain, and you can drop your fertility. All of these are really important things. So there's research emerging that dropping your carbs to 30 grams a day. But what I learned was lovely banana, 15 grams. So already I've eaten half of those 30 grams,
right,
if I was to try and go keto. But what we're looking at is more that the Eat Well plate might encourage you into about 200 grams of carbohydrate in the form of pasta or rice or potato, saying that this is healthy, it's a healthy balance. But actually what we need is to be reducing to around 60 to maybe 90 grams of carbohydrate. And then actually you can really have fun with that, because you can eat really well, but you're just learning what are low carbohydrate foods versus higher carbohydrate. And I've mentioned banana, which will then release glucose and fructose into the body.
Okay. All very interesting.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
If optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list, then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one super supplement brand, help you achieve that in the most convenient and comprehensive way possible. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health, sleep, emotional balance, and more. Benefit from the power, purity and positivity of our award-winning powder sachets or our therapeutic capsule range. Use code RADIO15 at reviveactive.com and save 15% off today. Super supplements for a super you.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
To come back around to fasting with conventional therapy, we were talking about. So this is, as I say, something sort of getting increasingly popular, increasingly known about. And you began to mention about the fact that therapies are not quite as simple as they used to be. And of course, there's a lot of new therapies around that weren't around a few years ago. So how does fasting relate with those? I mean, immunotherapy, is it something that is supportive in those situations in the same way as it is with chemotherapy, say?
Yeah, and what I'd like to emphasize with that discussion is that one of the first things that we can train our body to do is to be more metabolically flexible. In other words, to be able to run on glucose and then fast and shift to ketones. But while we're training our body up, it might be just a very simple overnight fast from 7 p.m. if you can bring your meal forward and then you don't eat again until 7 the next morning. I want to talk about more complex elements, but also just how someone could more simply incorporate this understanding into their lives without stressing. But what's really interesting about Walter Longo's research, and what I mean is he's reviewing research done all around the world, is that what they've been really clear to point out is that fasting is not enough to treat cancer. Just to reiterate,
right,
that where we are now is a real sense of integrative medicine being this combination of conventional, functional, lifestyle, and complementary approaches. But it's just interesting for me to see the research in mice where, you know, chemo on its own, the mice tended to get significant side effects very rapidly. Fasting on its own, the cancer cells would multiply. When you then combined the chemo and the fasting, then you started to get significant reduction in cancer cells and better side effects for your healthy cells. With the immune therapy, really, really interestingly, when they combined the fasting with the immune therapy, they could see that the body's immune system was increasing the number of cells that the immune therapy could stimulate.
Right.
And this is exciting because within the team at the National Center, we have been offering mistletoe. I've offered mistletoe for over 30 years of my career in this integrative oncology space. But we have been trying to stimulate that group of natural killer cells, because your body can be stimulated by the immune therapies, but it still needs its army to respond. So one of the things that teams are now looking at is whether, you know, if you were to combine mistletoe plus fasting plus vitamin C in control trials. I do need to bring in the fasting mimicking diet. Would that be a good point at which to bring in this technology?
I certainly want to talk about it anyway, so now's as good a time.
Yeah. Yeah, because we're talking about fasting as if it's one thing. And as you said at the beginning, Robin, it's lots of things. So we've been talking about a 12-hour fast. And what that means is that from 7 p.m., You can have cups of herb tea in the morning. You can have a black coffee, which is rather nice, but don't add milk or creamers, things like that. That's what's called a clean fast. Plenty of water, plenty of herb teas, which I'm a great devotee of. I have different herb teas at different times of day. It's a wonderful way to support the body. But if you are trying a more prolonged fast, then one of the things that Valter Longo and his longevity team in the States has been working on for a long time is how could you support the body to trigger a fasting response, a protective response, without caloric restriction, without reducing to a water fast? And this becomes really important with the cancer diagnosis, because if you think about resilience building, then what you don't want is to deplete the body. So Valter Longo therefore developed what he called the fasting mimicking diet. So, and this creates a lot of confusion.
It's a very confusing sounding name.
Yeah. I was talking to a nutritionist really who said, you know, don't those all come in packets? Isn't it very processed? So the 5-day fasting mimicking diet includes like a nut bar in the morning, macadamia nuts, pecans. These are very low carb nuts. When you are trying to keep carbohydrates low, even nuts are worth knowing about. It's worth knowing that peanuts are actually a legume, and not a true nut. All these things we can learn about. Then at lunch, you get a soup and you might have kale crackers and olives and then another soup. Not easy. You know, it's not easy. Day 4. Well, day 4 tends to be wonderful because you've got your ketones. You're feeling very bright mentally. You feel like you've got lots of energy. The brain likes ketones. The body likes ketones. Sportsmen will use ketones. They'll even take ketones, what we would say exogenously, rather than the ketones we might produce. So the idea that, and also the research that's been evolving, is to use the fasting mimicking diet during cancer treatments. And one of the things that I'm still learning, and maybe your listeners have even experienced it and can feedback, but when your cancer treatments are ongoing, you know, where you might have a chemotherapy plus an immune therapy, then pulsing that 5-day fasting mimicking diet around the time of the more intense cancer treatments is where the researchers are looking, you know, because the idea is that in any month, it's only 5 days. Otherwise, you know, the body can tire of, you know, if you were trying to calorically if you're restricting for too long. So that's the beauty. 2 things about the fasting mimicking diet. I know that when I posted on LinkedIn, I kind of get quite a few controversial posts. But for Valter Longo, if you're researching, you have to know what's in every box and the fact that everyone's having the same thing. But what they've devised is a way of reducing calories, keeping high quality nutrients that don't trigger the body into a stress fast. And that, you know, has been put to the test now in various settings, whether it be in chronic pain or diabetes or obesity. And now the cancer tests are also emerging, those research studies.
Interesting. So the fasting mimicking diet is an attempt to sort of, if you like, pull out the good effect of fasting and but without bringing in the bad effects of like it being some sort of crisis to the body that it's not getting any food. So we're trying to just benefit from the protective mechanisms, if you like, that come along with fasting.
Really importantly as well, it doesn't lead to muscle loss. So
right.
that's one of the key things. When you just do a simple water fast, there's a possibility that your body gets triggered into what we might call starvation mode. It's quite rare to break down muscle, but it can happen.
Right.
The research in the fasting mimicking diet has shown that it's protective of muscles. And as you know, we need those muscles during our cancer journey, for our energy, for our mitochondria, but also for our strength. It's important.
Yeah, more and more seems to be emerging about the importance of our muscles to us during cancer in lots of surprising ways. So, yeah, very important to look after them, obviously. And, of course, the big danger from oncologists' point of view all the time is always cachexia or wasting, which is a way a time when our muscles are being burnt out as fuel, basically. And that's their general concern. I imagine that when anybody talks about any kind of fasting, the alarm bells go on around cachexia for oncology teams. Is that still true?
Yes, and it's helpful to understand that cachexia is a specific tumor-driven weight loss. It can be rapid weight loss over a short amount of time, and it's often a sign that the cancer may be kind of ramping up its ability to control the body's metabolic pathways. But it's still quite rare, and it's seen more in end of life. So that cachexia, which, you know, one is fearful of at one level, is not the weight loss that you might see in the 5-day fasting mimicking diet, where the research shows people can, as they replenish, they can put the weight back on. So there are two very distinct elements.
Okay. So I think we've already covered quite an arena in which there's two scenarios. One of them is you're having specific treatments and you're wanting to support the body in going through them in the best possible way. The other one is you've got cancer and you want to be as healthy as possible all throughout your treatment and after. And fasting has a role to play in both, clearly. And I think you've described to some extent the role of fasting as just a health promotion technique. Do you want to say a bit more about it from that point of view, as just a thing generally to look at for people? I mean, it is for people anyway, full stop, but let's talk about particularly people with cancer.
Yes. So we, just coming back to this idea of the benefits of dropping your insulin, you therefore drop your insulin growth factor. When you drop insulin, you often drop leptin. So in a way, you're rebalancing some of that hormonal profile. If you have cancer, some of those elements like insulin growth factor is a growth promoter. So one of the things that you're trying to do is understand, and we can now understand cancers a lot better, like what are those receptors like, what's switching cancer on and off, and that's why there'll be medications out there, you know, maybe an anti-estrogen medication or a HER2 receptor medication. All of these are important. But your background metabolic pathways, if you can also drop your growth promoters, because we also know that protein can be, it can promote something called mTOR. So this idea of a background way of dropping your insulin is through a low carbohydrate, medium protein, and quite a lot of healthy fats. So I guess that if it was like a song, that song could begin right through your cancer journey. And Voltolongo calls it the longevity diet because he went to areas where people lived longer and saw that this was roughly the balance of good quality, complex carbohydrates, medium protein, and healthy fats. So That's kind of what you're trying to encourage your body into. But then when the going gets a bit tougher during specific cancer treatments, that's when you could bring in a more prolonged fast. But I wouldn't recommend that until you've actually supported your body into metabolic flexibility.
Right. So that's the first step, is to encourage your body to get to the point where it can switch over to creating and using ketones reasonably effortlessly and is used to it.
Yes. And that, you know, that might be the best time to do that, might be in your good phase away from some of your chemo, you know, so that you're trying to build resilience when the body's optimized. But then that image that I gave you of all the healthy cells, you know, lying down with armor above, that would be as you come into that time where there are going to be cancer treatments that specifically kill cancer cells.
Mm-hmm. Right.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
If you see the letters AIDA, do you immediately think of the opera by Verdi? AIDA is also an advertising acronym for those iconic Mad Men days. A is for attention, I is for interest, D is for desire, A is for action. This process is a timeless truism for making a sale. Fortunately, if your product or service is health-related, we can offer you guaranteed access to a global audience with a high interest in health, healthy lifestyle, and contemporary well-being. UKHealthRadio.com has a regular monthly audience of around 1.5 million health-conscious people. And Health Triangle, its award-winning monthly magazine, has around 20,000 paying subscribers. Find out more about both at UKHealthRadio.com. Let's all put health first.
Hey, are you tired of the irritation you get down there from pads and other bladder weakness products? Tena-sensitive care pads are the first ever bladder weakness pads enriched with a skin comfort formula. The skin-friendly layer in combination with the soft, 100% breathable materials helps protect intimate skin from irritation. And as always, you have triple protection from leaks, odor, and moisture. Gynecologist tested and dermatologically approved by the Skin Health Alliance. Look for Tena-sensitive care pads with a skin comfort formula online and in stores now.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So I'd like to talk a little bit more about sort of the mainstream view of all this at the moment, because with the growing kind of awareness I was mentioning, I imagine that an increasing number of oncologists are facing requests from patients to fast during treatment. And given the traditional stance of oncology towards all things nutritional, are patients getting the support they need to do this?
There is a charitable trust that work alongside Volta Longo where the teams can support people. But the simple answer, and others in the field may differ, but is no, there isn't obvious support here at the moment. A lot of patients are just taking it on themselves. But I think that, you know, 5 years ago, when very brave early adopters of this new approach with fasting, where they kind of just thought, well, I'm going to do it anyway, there is now, I think, enough evidence to empower a patient to say, I would, you know, like to fast. And I think that the teams in various parts of the world have been working in an integrated way. So the oncologists have been working with the researchers. I don't know of anyone doing that in the UK at the moment. I know the Charité have been. So I think that it feels to me that this could be driven by research. I just want to talk about this tension between early adoption and late adoption of integrative approaches or even new technologies.
Okay.
That in a way, we do need both ends of the spectrum to create a kind of a stable tension.
Yeah.
But I always feel like the person who hasn't got the time to wait will be the person who says, there's enough evidence for me to try this. And one of the things that the NCM are trying to do is to scale up with a fasting mimicking diet so that we can support people. And in those settings, just like with our mistletoe, we would create, you know, written documentation. Here's the research. And what we're asking a bit more now is we're asking our patients, please, can we write to the oncologist? Because patients are afraid that they might get criticized or even rejected if they admit to the integrative approaches they're using. Whereas I think we've got to the stage now where we really need to say, actually, I'm doing this and here's the evidence. I think that will be a way to break through this. I don't know how you feel about that, Robin.
Mm. Yeah, well, I mean, their concerns are fair enough. Plenty enough people have been shown the door because they want to do some integrative approaches. But I think the more that people have sort of solid backing for what they're doing, i.e. the NCIM, for example, is providing support for this and is consistent in doing that, you know, for a lot of patients in a lot of places, it's bound to have an impact eventually. It'll become accepted simply because it has to be. And so it has to be a good thing. I mean, as we know, no amount of kind of trying to get people interested in the science seems to work. The science is there. It's been there for long enough. And there's plenty enough for patients to put their money on it. But that doesn't mean there's any interest from oncology or will be. So it needs some kind of push, if you like, to make it happen. And I think what you're suggesting is great. Any kind of mechanism that pushes things forward gives patients more confidence to do what they want to do and feel supported in doing it has got to be a good thing.
And Dr. Catherine Zollman and myself chaired the Integrative Oncology Day at the Integrative and Personalized Medicine Conference last year. It was, you know, too many people wanting to turn up, very, very busy in the room and oncologists in the room. So, you know, there are various levers. What I would say is that some of the researchers focused in on breast cancer and the fasting mimicking diet. And one of the things that's difficult is, like, my new patient this week had a very unusual cancer diagnosis. And then it's very hard because the research is not going to be available anytime soon.
Right.
So that's the other thing, is we've got such a variety of cancer diagnoses that we also need a few brave oncologists to say, look, I feel the science underpinning this, this metabolic understanding of what can protect the body during cancer treatments, what can promote the cancer when cancer treatments finish. There's enough science now to say nutrition has got to be a really important part of what we look at when we assess someone and support their resilience building.
I agree. That whole, we've got to do, you know, mountains of research for every single type of cancer before we support. It's just, you know, we'll never get to the end of it. Cancer's running ahead of us much too fast to take that approach. We have to take some bold steps, as you say, and say, well, look, this is obviously health promoting and therefore it's a good idea. And be prepared to adopt things wholesale and to watch what happens.
Can I just also just come back to it being fun and enjoyable? So, you know, two of my family members have type 1 diabetes and a couple with type 2. I created a fabulous mash made from cauliflower and swede. So we talk about no below, when we're trying to drop our carbohydrates, no below soil vegetables. But you get these amazing vegetables. Swede is very low in carbohydrate. So boiling it up together and then mashing it with butter and black pepper, you would not know that it wasn't potato. So I guess, and we put all our recipes on our membership site at the NCIM. And I guess that one of the things that I'm really keen on, and as you know, I combine a lot of different integrative approaches, is whatever you do should be joyful. It should be fun. You should feel in charge of it. It shouldn't be something that just feels very hard to do. But you also just need the right people around to support you and affirm your choices. So
Right, great. Thanks for that point. We just about got time to talk about one more thing, which I'd like to speak about, which is supervision. As with all things to do with cancer, fasting is a lot more nuanced than you'd like to think. And it's probably true to say that expert oversight's always a good idea. However, experts cost, and fasting has to be one of the most accessible and is actually beyond being cheap. It saves you money. So it's an ultra-suitable, powerful technique for people who are flat broke. So can you tell us where you think the lines are drawn between okay to try yourself at home and really needing supervision?
Yeah, well, I have come into this arena very cautiously, you know, building experience through metabolic health first, not yet ready to support or supervise cancer patients, but we're heading in that direction. The fasting mimicking diet itself is expensive. So you'll be looking at £250 for 5 days. That there are kind of reductions. I would say personally that it is an area where supervision is really important, particularly if you're on a complex cancer regime. What I would love to see is actually the cancer nurse specialist being trained up so that we really can integrate this into conventional treatment. So, you know, as people come in to the usually, you know, an outpatient facility, they've already been messaged about, you know, are you entering into a fast, making sure there's lovely filtered water and herb teas. I mean, one of the dilemmas can be you arrive in and there are biscuits and, you know, it's like, the ideal would be that all of that supervision occurs with the expert team.
Absolutely. Always the way with integrative medicine. Ideal. It happens at the point of delivery, yeah.
And I would like the same thing with mistletoe. We know that that is not currently available. So we are trying to become a team, you know, like a team that could support, and we're kind of just making that available through our nutritionists as well as our doctors. Because any time you see a doctor in a social enterprise like we are, that's more expensive. So there's something for me about the expense of supporting someone into fasting across maybe an 18-month treatment trajectory, you know, by the time everything is done. So this isn't this. I mean, I suppose I'm saying my message at the moment is if you're brave enough to do it on your own with a bit of help, then just be cautious. But I think that all of the integrative oncology teams across the UK should really ramp up their ability to support people.
Okay. And what are the red flags that people should be looking out for? What should people be monitoring?
Yes, there's been various red flags around eating disorders, which might be a strange message, you know, in the cancer space. But it's still important to realize that if you've had a background of an eating disorder, then anything that might trigger control, you know, which caloric restriction, you know, you can feel like one of the red flags is if you don't feel able to eat normally after the 5 day fasting mimicking diet or after the 36 hour water fast, you know, like you want people to then move freely into healthy eating. So if in conversation I'm finding someone who's trying to control their food all the time, that would be a red flag. There are concerns about kidney function, and how you might manage the fast. And this is where the expert teams, because a lot of cancer treatments can impact on kidney function, even if it's short term. So this is where that supervision element and where screening beforehand with blood tests is important. So those would be kind of two of the red flags. But then, you know, no one is encouraged into a 5-day fast or a 3-day fast around chemo if you're very underweight. So having your BMI in a certain area, and all of that needs looking at. It wouldn't stop you necessarily, because you might always have been very slim and very fit, but it just needs taking into consideration. How is another kilogram, 1.5 kilogram weight loss going to feel for you? But the idea again is to replenish healthily in between this pulsed fasting.
Right. And the overall findings are that people who do fasting don't overall lose weight as a result.
Yeah.
Is that right? Yeah.
Well, it's right. It depending on what you actually want. Like, the research in obesity shows that if you do a 5-day fasting mimicking diet once a month for 6 months, you do lose weight and you keep that weight off.
Right.
You know, those will be people who might kind of want to maintain that weight loss, whereas in the cancer sphere, you might actively replenish a little bit more proactively.
Right. Well, I suppose a better way of saying it would be it doesn't promote an unhealthy weight in the end.
And it's very important, again, just coming back to the body's ability to circulate and maintain homeostasis, the body will try and return you to your healthy weight.
Exactly, right.
And that's important. If you allow it, it will think, oh, well, that was a fast, that was nice, I had a bit of a clear out, and now I'm going to eat more.
Right.
Yeah.
Fabulous. Okay, well, that's it. We're out of time. As always, been great to chat, Elizabeth. Thanks very much for a very enlightening discussion on fasting. I'm sure lots of people are going to find that helpful.
Great. Thank you, Robin.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Robin.
I hope that was useful. As with all things around cancer, what started out as a straightforward strategy has become quite nuanced as more has been learnt. But nonetheless, there are a lot of benefits to be had within fairly easy reach of many people, so the rewards are well worth the effort of a little research. I look forward to being able to say that the NCIM is providing direct support, as outlined by Dr. Thompson, in the not-too-distant future. Thanks for listening today. I should be back at the same time next week with another episode of the Yes to Life show here on UK Health Radio. So I hope you can join me again. Goodbye. Thank you.